Moncrief on News Talk.
If you're with an old friend talking about the past, you may often find that you have differing memories of the same event, or that one of you will remember something that the other can't recall at all. And it might not be true. Memory is a slippery thing and we all create false ones. But is that necessarily a bad thing? In UCC, they're about to embark on a major study of false memories. And we're joined from there by Dr. Gillian Murphy. Gillian, good afternoon.
Hi, Sean. How's it going?
Why can't we remember things perfectly? Given that we can't, doesn't that mean that like the whole design of the idea is faulty, really?
Yeah, it's such a great question. And when I teach university students here about memory and I teach them how flawed it is, it's often a question, you know, some very clever student will put up their hand and say, why did evolution fail us so badly? Why can't I remember what I had for lunch yesterday? Why do I create false memories of things that never happened? And so I think my answer to that and the big part of what we've been funded by this European funding to do is to try to understand the evolutionary benefits of why and how it might be more beneficial to inaccurately remember the past. You know, we live in this world of technology now where we are used to our kind of evidence of the past being perfect. You know, we know exactly what happened when, and we have video recordings, and sometimes we have that expectation of our own memories when, you know, really in an evolutionary sense, it's probably not likely that that is what we evolved to do.
Yeah. Now, there are, as I understand it, there's a small amount of people who do have perfect recall, but they find that torturous.
Yeah, there are. So I've worked with some of these people before. There's only about 100 people in the whole world that have been identified with this. And we call them highly superior autobiographical memory individuals. So HSAMs is what we call them. And you can find a HSAM test online if you're interested. And you'll see the questions are impossible. Like people say, I think I have a good memory. I think I might be one of those. And then if you actually look at these questions, it will be, what was the major news event on the 7th of March, 2018? And what were you doing every Tuesday for the last 3 years? Spell it out. So incredible detail. And these people can do that. They can say, yeah, I remember I was sitting on the couch with my friend Jenny and I was wearing a red jumper, and they remember everything. And, you know, when you hear that, you think, that's what we should be. That's what the rest of us should be like. If evolution really worked, that's what we would all be like. We would do better at school. Our relationships would be better. Everything would be better if we remembered like that. But that's not the case at all. People with this particular ability, they tend to say that they find their memories overwhelming, that everywhere they go, they're reminded of something because they don't forget these events from their personal life. And so, you know, most of us have had that experience of hearing a song or smelling a perfume or something, and you just get catapulted back into a memory. It's really striking when it happens to you. And they say that happens to them all the time. And so they end up being kind of below average students. They often, you know, anecdotally actually don't do that well in their relationships as well, because they find it difficult to move on. You know, we say things like time is a great healer, because, you know, you move on and the memory gets a bit dulled over time of how much someone hurt you or something like that. They say everything is as fresh as if it happened yesterday, and it doesn't really serve them. And so studying those people helps us to understand how imperfect memories are actually probably quite useful for our happiness and for our social relationships.
So is there a process? There must be, but has it been identified, which is happening inside our brain or our consciousness, which is filtering out memories and deciding, well, we'll keep that one we'll just, you know, stick in another cupboard?
Yeah, absolutely. And we forget most things that happen to us. You know, remembering is actually the exception rather than the rule, because we don't need to remember everything. You know, you don't need to remember every minute detail of everything you ever did. You remember the important things, you remember the exceptional things, and most of the rest of it just gets forgotten about because you don't need it. And so in that way, your brain is actually highly efficient. It's discarding things that you don't need, and it's stopping you from being bombarded with information. But where the problem comes is when we have these expectations of our memory that it will work like a video camera. You know, often in the legal system, that's where it, you know, it really comes to a head with an eyewitness or something like that. We expect someone to have this perfect memory because it's really important. But, you know, eyewitnesses are just as likely to be mistaken, to forget things, because, you know, they just have human memories like the rest of us.
Even if there are things that at the time were saying, this is very significant. I mean, I'd love to be able to say to you, Gillian, that I can remember the specific circumstances of the births of all my children, but I can't. It's just a kind of a blancmange memory of birth.
Yeah. Yeah, particularly when you have kind of a social script of how something would go. You know, we do lots of studies on things like this. We all have a general idea. It's something we would call a schema of how particular events go. You basically know what it's like to eat at a restaurant. You know what it's basically like to go to the cinema. You know all the steps that are involved. And so often, you know, when people's memories start to distort, they'll just get closer back towards that general idea. You know, the way someone gives birth in a film, you'll probably find a lot of your memories, you retain those parts of it, you know, the general gist. And it's highly efficient as well. You know, though they're very emotionally important to us and those memories are, you know, considered important in your life, it doesn't mean that you have to have this perfect recall. You know, often people mistakenly believe, I think, that, well, if you cared, you would still remember. Mm. And really, that's not the way memory works at all.
Yeah, actually, somebody's texting to say perfect example of memory loss is the pain of childbirth. We'd only ever have one child. That wasn't it. Well, that's so true.
And it's actually very understudied, like really surprisingly. We're starting to study that here now. And what I'm really interested in as well is how women can forget the horror of morning sickness. I found morning sickness really difficult. And when I was pregnant with my second child, I said to my husband, like, oh, my first child was a boy and my second was a girl. And I said, I'm convinced this is a girl because it feels so different to last time. Like, it's been months of being this sick. I wasn't this bad last time. And he was like, this is exactly the way you were last time. How have you forgotten this? And when I was in the throes of it, I did think to myself a lot, God, if I had remembered how clearly, like how really awful it is to be this sick for months, would I have decided to do this again? And so I'm interested now in studying women kind of longitudinally, like after they have one child and as they come to that decision, possibly to decide to have a second, maybe at what point might their memories kind of get dulled and reshaped and how they're aware of that? Because I suspect things like that happen to most of us.
It's actually another listener has a question for you. What's an eidetic memory? Is that the same as these kind of hyper remember people?
Yeah, it's actually a myth. So there's kind of actually no such thing as an eidetic memory. It's like a photographic memory. It's a more scientific term for it. But the closest thing we have to that is a highly superior autobiographical memory, a HSAM. But the distinction there is that someone with a HSAM, that only applies to details from their own personal life. The A there is autobiographical. So it's memories of things they did, they said, they cared about, not general, like, you know, facts in a book, remembering details from an encyclopedia. We don't have anyone like that.
Okay, now, false memories then, and obviously there's a context in which in court cases and the like, false memories become hugely significant, as well, I suppose, whether somebody remembers something accurately or not. Mm-hmm. Leaving that aside for a moment, are there different sort of circumstances where false memories can come about? An example that strikes me is that people are often told things by their parents. Remember when you were five and you weed when we were on the floor when we were in pennies, and then it's said to you so often you think you can remember it yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And something we see really commonly in our work is siblings start to argue as to which one of them it happened to, you know, because they've both heard the same story from a parent, or the parent has gotten mixed up as to which one of them it actually happened to. And you'll see both siblings say, no, that happened to me. And, you know, often it's unclear which of them it did happen to. So, yeah, that's a really kind of common method we have for testing false memories is we would get people to sign up for a memory study. And let's say you signed up, I would then contact maybe a sibling of yours or one of your parents with your permission. And they would tell me about events from your childhood. And I then go back to you and I say, here are all these things your parent has told me about your childhood. And I might go through two or three of them. And I slip in one that definitely isn't true, that I've confirmed with your parent is not true. And I'll say, you know, when you were five, you got stuck at the top of a roller coaster and you had to be rescued by the fire brigade or something distinctive, but it didn't happen to you. And often someone will initially say, yeah, that didn't happen. I don't remember that. And it's remarkable. You can just talk to them a couple of times. Usually I do maybe two or three, you know, 10-minute interviews about it, where you just say, what would it have felt like? Who would have been there? And you just get them to think about it and speculate. And after a few of those conversations, you'll find generally about like 25 to 30% of people will have formed a full false memory where they're convinced of it. They'll say, yeah, it was raining. And then I rang my mom, and they expand on it and they completely remember that the thing has happened. And it's just incredible to watch it happen in front of you, actually, to watch someone do that.
Is that because they kind of, a part of them wants to believe that or wants to remember that?
Yeah, not necessarily, because we know that's important for us to figure out if they're just going along with it. So in some of our studies, actually, we offer people like financial bonuses if they can resist it. So if they, if their memories are correct, we will pay them more. We try all sorts of different ways to siphon out the idea that they might be kind of just, you know, going along with it. And it's pretty clear, you know, even afterwards, then we'll ask them, we might tell them, we'll say, look, this is what we're actually studying. We're studying false memories. One of these wasn't true. Can you pick it? And if you can pick the right one that isn't true, you get a further bonus. And people really struggle to do it because for them, the memory is real. It's as real as any other memory that they're bringing to mind.
Mm. Do people have false memories about bad things about themselves?
Yes.
Oh, they can. All right.
They can, yeah, certainly. As in, I suppose what's more common actually is that people tend to have distorted memories, but in a positive way. We all have this natural positivity bias, which is that we remember that we gave more to charity than we did. We remember that we were a better friend than we were. There's a really nice study that showed people tend to remember they got lower cholesterol test results than they really did. We have all these little ways of protecting our sense of self, you know, and that actually gets stronger as you get older. Yeah. And it's thought to relate to our kind of increasing sense of self and increasing sense of happiness as we get older, that, you know, it's like that saying about like have the wisdom to change the things you can and accept the things you cannot change, that you can kind of rework your version of the past completely without your knowledge, and it makes you happier in yourself.
Just going back to your study for a moment, if one of your test subjects, and you go to the test subject's siblings, saying, and get questions about stories about their childhood, does it matter or not that the sibling is remembering correctly?
Yeah, it depends. And so like this is a complexity sometimes, because we can't go running a study about how flawed memory is and then say the whole thing hinges on a sibling's memory being correct. Certainly you can't. And so, you know, other times maybe we would design an event that is just impossible. So, you know, one of these studies, you tell people that there was an outbreak of, say, listeria in their school, and like it didn't happen. We can verify historically, like that did not happen, and go with that. So it's kind of you're triangulating the evidence. Every which way of doing this is a bit imperfect, but across the board, then you get a full picture that memory is incredibly easy to implant.
In fact, one of our listeners has texted in to say, I have a vivid memory of getting lost in a theme park as a small child and just how terrifying it was. I was telling this story a few years ago and my sister piped up and said that it wasn't me who got lost. It was her. For years, I'd been lying, but swore I could remember it.
Yeah. And you know, I would really challenge that listener. They weren't lying. They remembered it. You know, people often, they're very quick to conflate as if the opposite of a true memory is a lie. And I suppose there's always that third option. You're honestly misremembering. You know, you weren't lying there at all. And yeah, this happens so easily and we're misled so easily. And it's part of why, you know, there's a trend kind of going on recently. It's on TikTok that my students have been telling me about, that there's a trend on TikTok encouraging people who are experiencing mental health difficulties that they're probably repressing a memory and they should go and look for it. Mm. And from a memory perspective, like it's the opposite advice we would give. If you go looking for a repressed, buried memory, like the idea of repressed memory, most memory scientists would agree that it's a myth. And if you go looking for something, you will probably find it, especially if you do that, you know, without the guidance of an accredited counsellor. And there's a big trend going on for that at the moment, that memory scientists are trying to speak out more about and trying to dissuade people from doing it. Because what can happen and what has happened in the past is that people engage in kind of suggestive therapy to help them uncover what they believe are true memories. And often, you know, what they end up recalling, it turns out later, it's completely impossible. It didn't happen. But for them, you know, it's very real, very upsetting for them and potentially very upsetting for someone that they might accuse on the basis of these recovered memories. It's a really complicated, really sensitive area. And people just need to be mindful of that when they go kind of looking for memories that they don't already have.
Somebody else has just texted in saying, I suddenly remember being lost at a fun fair as well. So there seems to be an epidemic of it a few years ago. And so by the same token, just because we did mention the legal ramifications of this earlier on, if you're asked over and over again by the police or two or three times about a certain set of circumstances. And if your memory might be hazy about it initially, does that, if you like, firm up the memory? I'll give it more solidity in your mind, even though you actually initially didn't remember it that well.
Yeah, it can. And like this can work for the good and for the bad, if you know what I mean. So it can help you to get more kind of confidence in your memory, and that might be good. But potentially, if what you're recalling isn't true, you know, suggestive questioning and pressure, we even sometimes see people, you know, they'll make false confessions about things that they didn't do. And sometimes when someone makes a false confession, they're just doing it to kind of, you know, be allowed to leave the police station or to get someone else out of trouble. But sometimes they make what we would call an internalized false confession. And that's where they truly believe that they did the thing. So they've built a false memory as a result of all the questioning and all the kind of suggestion. They start to believe that they really did it. And again, you know, they're not lying. They believe that they have done it. And there are versions of this we can do in the lab. And it's a slightly mean kind of paradigm, because you get someone into the lab and you tell them to do, you know, say a little task on a computer, and you say, whatever you do, don't press this red button. If you do, you're going to break my computer, you're going to delete my data, don't press this button. And they say, okay. And then, you know, you blow up the computer, and then you say, oh my God, I can't believe you pressed that red button. And people will naturally say, I didn't. But after a while, and after being pressured.
These are grown-ups who will say
that.
Because I know there was these tests they did with kids and sweets, and they all lied through their teeth about eating the sweets.
Adults will do it too. It takes a bit more pressure, but they will start to say, well, I must have done it and I didn't realize it. And then you'll see, it's not everyone. You might see kind of 15 to 20% of people will then start to add details to it. They'll say, yeah, I sneezed and my hand moved and all of this. And they truly believe it. And again, you know, we use methods to make sure they're not just lying. They're not just going along with it. We really try to get to the bottom of, do you really remember that this happened? And they do. Memory is very malleable. But at the same time, you know, most of the time, our memory serves us great. We're all able to have conversations. We're able to have relationships. We're able to, you know, testify about things that have happened to us. You know, sometimes people hear about our research on the malleability of memory, and they think maybe that we're implying we should never believe people. And that's not the case at all. You know, it's a nuanced thing. And once we can understand particular circumstances where someone could be led into something, like I say, suggestive therapeutic practices, that can help us kind of, I suppose, prevent people coming to harm through the malleability of memory. So we just have to be careful with it.
Yeah. Now, somebody else is texting in a question. I must say this bothers me as well. I can remember what I ate for dinner 8 years ago, but I can't remember where I left my keys 5 minutes ago. What's that about?
Yeah, like there's all kinds of reasons why we forget things very easily in the current moment. Most of them will just come down to not paying attention. So before you can kind of form a memory in your brain, you have to pay attention to the thing that you're doing. And so typically the issue is that you just weren't paying attention to where you put the keys. You weren't looking. And again, in a kind of crime situation, that's where, you know, you have to be mindful of the fact that people are not video cameras. So sometimes you'll have a situation where a person is walking down the street and they're listening to headphones, and a crime might happen in front of them. And, you know, most of the time the person just wasn't looking and they didn't see it. But there's such social pressure that, well, it happened right in front of you. You know, you should have seen something. And people feel pressured to remember something. And like I've said, if you go looking for memory and you're questioned a lot, you probably will come up with something, but it might not necessarily be accurate.
Yeah. But I suppose what that question was driving at a bit, it seemed the seemingly random nature of it.
It is and it isn't, you know, because it'll depend what you're doing. You know, if you're not paying attention. Oh, but in terms of what you do remember in the past.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, usually it's that something will stick out. But the thing I would also say is, you know, maybe this listener thinks they remember what they had for dinner 8 years ago. Typically, we have no way of verifying that, you know. That's the thing. A lot of the time, the reason the malleability of memory comes as a surprise to most of us is that most of the time, you know, our memory isn't being checked. It just feels real. And this person can feel very confident that they know exactly what they had for dinner. But who's going to challenge you on that? You know, it's rare that any of us have CCTV footage that will contradict what it is we thought we saw. And it's really surprising to us then when we realize how much we get it wrong.
Yeah. Like now, an example of that is that often on this program, the team will say, we're doing, you know, all these subjects today. And I will say, oh, we've done that before. We did that, you know, and I'm convinced we did do that before. Yeah. And when did we do it? Oh, we did it in the last maybe 6 months or so. And then it was like 7 years ago. Now, I am right, but it all seems more recent to me for some strange reason.
Yeah. And, you know, there's some really interesting studies on how the older you get. So the older you get, the less novelty you kind of tend to have in your life. If you think, you know, when you're a teenager and when you're in your early 20s, things are novel and everything is a new experience. And so subjectively, that feels like a longer period of time because everything is new and you're storing all those memories. Once things start to kind of repeat in your life, or you're doing something like a radio show for a long time, you know, you have less distinctive memories and it all kind of collapses down. And so your subjective experience of time does actually get shorter as you get older.
Because it's almost like it's been my memories of 20 years are compacted down to about 6 months.
Therefore,
everything feels there's so many questions coming in. Actually, I'll ask you one more. Is this the same as death? My dad died recently and he was a great man and father, however difficult at times. Now, my mother has anointed him in conversation and I know a lot of it is made up. Now, that's a very Irish trait. People are wonderful suddenly as soon as you pop your clogs.
Yeah, but isn't that a beautiful thing? You know, I think sometimes we just get too hung up on accuracy sometimes, you know, and it's interesting to think like, what is memory? What purpose does it serve? And one of the main purposes that it does serve is it supports our relationships. It doesn't necessarily have to be accurate to support those relationships, you know. I think some of these are really important questions sometimes to stand back at. We get so fixated on truth for lots of good reasons, but it doesn't mean that in every situation, you know, you need to come to blows with a grieving widow about whether if something actually happened exactly like that, you know, when for lots of reasons, maybe it's lovely. And I think as a nation and as a culture, you know, we're particularly good at that kind of storytelling. And that saying of, you know, you never let the truth get in the way of a good story. That's maybe fine sometimes, you know, I don't think we should always try to be machines or camera like either.
Gillian, best of luck with the study. It sounds absolutely fascinating. And thanks for speaking with us today. That was Dr. Gillian Murphy there, a senior lecturer at the School of Applied Psychology in UCC.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.